The Army's original plan was to conduct a force withdrawal beginning in mid-summer 2003, bringing its presence down to about 30,000 troops by late summer. Instead, late summer was when the situation in Iraq really began to feel like a war for many of the 130,000 American soldiers in the country. August 29 brought the third major car bombing of the month as insurgents hit another ally of the U.S. effort, Shiite political leader Ayatollah Muhammad Bakir Hakim. The leader of SCIRI, the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, Hakim had been one of the most important political figures in Iraq and the most influential religious figure to have openly supported the U.S. occupation. The car bomb that killed him soon after Friday prayers in the holy city of Najaf also murdered more than 90 others. The message was that the United States, for all its firepower, couldn't protect its Iraqi allies. During late July and August, Generals Abizaid and Sanchez discussed with their division commanders and other top officers three possible responses to the insurgency, recalled Major General Renouart. One was tactical withdrawal from trouble spots. Take a city like Ramadi or Fallujah and tell them to police it and run it themselves, he said. The second was use small elements like SF, Special Forces teams, to do raids and a surgical application of power. The third was, you are present in cities, and you are intimidating enough to create security by presence. Ultimately, we decided all three had a place. One reason for that was that Abizaid didn't want to limit the choices available to the division commanders. If you need to use a scalpel, here's a scalpel, was the thinking, Renouart said. If you need to use a mallet, I don't want to take that away from you. But there were many more sledgehammers than scalpels in the U.S. Army inventory, both physically and mentally. Even the short-term successes of the U.S. Army in Iraq seemed to have long-term costs that went unrecognized at the time. The story of how intelligence operations were revamped in the fall of 2003 illustrates this sad pattern. All summer long, commanders had fretted about the poor quality of their intelligence. Several months into the war, they had no idea who the enemy really was, nor did they know much about what Iraqis thought of them, especially the views of those beyond the narrow world of those, such as interpreters, who were on the U.S. payroll. Recognizing their profound lack of understanding, American commanders launched a major effort in the fall of 2003 to improve U.S. intelligence gathering and analysis. On October 1, Abizaid issued an order to reorganize intelligence operations in Iraq so that all the data gathered would pour into one new intelligence fusion center. In this new organization, analysts would work side by side with interrogators and the CIA would cooperate with military intelligence. Until the fall, the CIA, the special operations units, and the divisions all had separate databases. Now, a new database would be created to try to ensure, for example, that someone detained and released in Ramadi would trigger an alert when he was caught a week later in Mosul with traces of explosives on his hands. Most important, networks would be delineated so that the U.S. effort would go after not just the frontline delivery men of roadside bombs, but also some of the commanders running the bomb factories, the keepers of safe houses and villages on the outskirts of Baghdad, the financiers sending in new funds and supplies, and the recruiters training people and sending them in across the Syrian border. In the fall, CENTCOM spent $11 million to create an intelligence architecture for this, a senior official in that headquarters said. These steps were seen inside the Army as a major success story, and they were portrayed as such to journalists. Yet, it was not so, even though it felt that way to many officers, probably to the majority of those involved. In insurgencies, lots of things are counterintuitive, one expert who consulted with U.S. military intelligence in Iraq said later. That is, the move that seems reasonable may not actually be the wise one. For example, getting better intelligence was a laudable tactical goal. But launching an all-out offensive that used combat methods against the population to obtain it wasn't, because it undercut the larger strategic goal.